Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're gonna get Amin in those, so you gotta listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your co-host, Big Waz, a.k.a. Wazzy Lambre, and Nando Vila, super producer, Hollywood big shot that he is, couldn't be with us today. He's out gallivanting Sundance Film Festival. I'm sure he's, you know, he's giving all of his top 10 lists. He's telling people to follow his letterbox. I'm sure he's being a Hollywood mogul that he is. But today, we got another woke bro up in here, my brother Ben Burgess. What's up, Ben?
Hey, man. I'm always really happy to be back. I mean, it is funny. I think my invitation to Sundance must have gotten lost in the mail.
Yeah, they must have sent it to your old address. Oh, they got you moved to LA. That's
yeah.
That's what happened. Oh, man. Anyway, on today's show, man, I just wanted to have a general conversation about what's in the news. I mean, aside from the Republican primary, Donald Trump is kicking their fucking asses up and down the United States of America. He's got 20 million indictments. It doesn't matter. He's just killing everyone. He's beating Biden in the polls. It's hilarious. And there's not, you know, whatever. Didn't want to talk about that, but it's hard for me to think that Biden isn't losing support because of his handling of what's happening in the Middle East. And it seems to just get worse and worse by the day. Last week, they fired their first airstrikes on the Houthis in Yemen. They said it's because of the blockade in the Red Sea. Of course, Ben, they're blockading the Red Sea because the Israeli government is bombing the shit out of Gaza indiscriminately. So instead of being like, hey, our partners in Israel, maybe we should take a different tact or strategy or try something different. Instead of going in that direction, they say, no, let's make more war, more killing, more bombing by bombing the Houthis. And again, Joe Biden just did a press briefing today, and he was asked at this press briefing, essentially the exact question, Ben.
Yeah.
Are the airstrikes in Yemen working? This is, guys, this is not, okay, so that's the question posed to President Commander-in-Chief Joe Biden. And I'm not making this quote up. This is a real quote. Joe Biden replied, are they stopping the Houthis? No. Are they going to continue? Yes. This is Joe Biden's answer to, are the airstrikes in Yemen working? Are they stopping the Houthis? No. Are they going to continue? Yes. Ben, what the fuck?
We were talking a little bit before we started recording. I was saying it's really amazing to me that that combination of words could come out of his mouth and he didn't have a moment afterwards of being like, hold on, what did I just say? Right? Like, does that make sense? This is clearly the idea that a few more bombs in Yemen are going to stop the Houthi blockade in the Red Sea is bizarre, because, you know, I know people's memories are short. It's the old joke about how God invented war to make Americans learn geography. But Yemen has been continuously bombed for a very long time, right?
Yes.
This is
our
this
great is friends, the Saudis, have been bombing the ever living shit out of them for years, going back to the Obama administration. So this is three presidents now that they've been bombing the shit out of Yemen, ostensibly to, you know, thwart the Houthis, and it hasn't worked. They've only become stronger since these bombings have started.
Yeah, exactly. Like, at this point, the Houthis are, you know, I mean, they're not diplomatically recognized by anybody, really, although the Saudis have been negotiating with them because they have no choice. But, like, the Houthis are the government of Yemen. They control the vast majority of territory in that country. It's not like the Saudis didn't have the biggest and the best bombs, you know, courtesy of us, right, for all those years of bombing and really the siege that happened in Yemen during all those years, right? You know, was like something medieval. I mean, it was really extreme stuff. This is, you know, if that didn't do it, right? The idea that, like, you know, compared to all that, right, this is nothing. So the idea that this is going to stop it, just even take morality out of it, take, you know, world politics out of it, take the, you know, what I would certainly call the ethnic cleansing in Gaza out of it, right? Take all that out of it, just like on its own terms, just as a practical issue. The idea that, oh, well, we have this problem that they're blockading the Red Sea and we need that for global trade. They're actually calling this Operation Prosperity Guardian, which is something else. Jeez. But, okay, so here's our solution to free it up, right? We're going to drop a few more bombs on the Houthis. That doesn't make any sense, but we've already tested this. Like, when there was a ceasefire.
Right, if it was a new idea that we could just recognize, like, that's probably not going to work, but it hasn't been tested. So you say, so, you know, I'll give the listeners example, because a lot of our listeners are sports fans, right? So when the Clippers made the trade for James Harden, it was obvious that Russell Westbrook needed to go to the bench. But the coach was like, you know, Ty Lue was like, you know what? All of my veterans, all of my stars are going to want Russ to start. I know it's not going to work. Anybody with half a brain knows it's not going to work with him starting. But let's try it just so we can show the stars and the important players on the team that they that we tried it. They can watch it not work and we can move on with our lives. This ain't that.
This is something
that's been proven not to work, and we're doing it anyway.
But you know what was proven to work? When there was a ceasefire in Gaza, then diplomacy. The Houthis stopped, right? Because they've been saying all along, right? You know, we're doing this because of Gaza, you know, because of this, you know, campaign of bombing and then incursions, you know, ground troops into Gaza that, like, really just because, as you said, right, you know, could be people watching who aren't necessarily, like, obsessive news and politics, you know, people. Mm-hmm. So people might not quite have a sense of how bad it's been, but there are 2.3 million people who live in Gaza, and 1.9 million of them have been displaced from their homes since October. Right? That's how bad it's been. And so, under circumstances like that, it's not really that surprising that one of your neighbors, who is already pretty hostile to you, right, would intervene. Right. And take action to try to stop what you're doing. Right. That's what the Houthi government in Yemen has done, you know, imposing this naval blockade. And you can throw around words like pirate all you want. Although I think if you're talking about a government use, you know, like that is it's not a non-state actor, you know, like you're talking about the people who are governing this country who are going in and saying, OK, we're going to. You know, we're going to stop. Like, I mean, was the U.S. doing piracy when it did the blockade on Cuba during the, you know, Cuban Missile Crisis? I don't know. But they but
we know that there's a double standard for the U.S., obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's like really important, too, because another dimension of all this is that if anybody cares about this, you know, from the perspective of the law, right, of the American Constitution, this is illegal, right? There are a bunch of people in Congress who have pointed this out. People in the squad, certainly, but also people like Ro Khanna, right? You know, one or two Republicans like Mike Lee, but mostly these progressive Democrats have been pointing this out. And this is, you know, the excuses, because you can't say, like, for years and years and years, American presidents, Bush, Obama, Trump, like, whatever they wanted to do, right? They'd say, oh, this is the 2001 authorization for the use of military force, right? That's like the all-purpose hall pass to do whatever you want to do in the Middle East. But at this point, they've kind of given up on that because it so obviously has absolutely nothing to do with what that was about, right? Which was about the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and all of that. So you have to say, well, we could find some, you know, act of Congress about piracy somewhere, you know, but, like, again, that doesn't really seem to apply. And, you know, what people are sort of left to resort to is saying, well, this is, you know, that, okay, because the president is the commander in chief of the army, without Congress declaring war, he's still allowed to repel attacks. But the only attacks are because the U.S. sent ships to a place where there was already a war going on. And so, yeah, if you do that, right, like, there are going to be attacks. But if it's that easy, right, to get around, like, the requirement that you need Congress to go to war, then the requirement is just meaningless because, you know, that's the easiest. Okay, well, all right, let's send some ships and, you know, to aid one of the sides in a war. They inevitably take some enemy fire. And then we're acting in self-defense. It's just kind of silly, right?
Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
And like, and I guess the last thing I'd say about this is, if you can, like, even if you put all that aside, right, like, you don't care what it says in the Constitution, you don't care, you know, you don't care about the Palestinians who, like, if you read the kind of reports that are happening in Gaza of, you know, they, like little kids having to have amputations with no anesthetic because some of the, you know, hospitals are bombed, the electricity is all out, you know, all this stuff. If you don't care about any of that, I guess my last pitch would be, okay, but do you care about the U.S. getting involved in another big war in the Middle East? Because we've done that before, and it never seems to go well.
Yeah, we've gotten our asses kicked twice. In the sense, yes, we deposed Saddam Hussein and got him killed, but Iraq has been a freaking quagmire since ISIS came through in its stead. It's worse than what it was before. Like, even the most staunchest supporters of the Iraqi invasion will tell you today, on January 18th of 2024, the situation in Iraq is worse than it was before we invaded. Like, we've made it worse by invading. Of course, Afghanistan, it was about 6 hours before the Taliban rolled in and toppled the regime that we had been propping up for 20 years. Like, literally 6 hours. Like, that shit needs to, like, that doesn't get said enough. And when these people are talking about their strategies over there, like, the Taliban came back, took over Afghanistan hours after we left.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, it's worse than that, because it was hours after we'd started to leave. But, like, we literally couldn't get all the way to the airport.
Right? But before they were already back. 20 years, literally trillions spent on this project. And we couldn't even get out the airport before the Taliban had already taken it back. That war was started because, yes, we needed to find, allegedly, and kill Saddam Hussein. Then we wanted to make a new government. You know, Rumsfeld right. and them had these grand designs with Iraq and Afghanistan. We're going to make this new all-private, just this capitalist, you know, fucking Milton Friedman wet dream in the Middle East. It's going to be great. Didn't work. The nation building didn't work. We're going to drive out the Taliban because they, you know, they fostered the terrorists and they hid Saddam, bin Laden and all of this. And the Taliban's going to be gone. 20 years. These motherfuckers didn't let us leave the airport. Okay. So the idea that, yeah, let's get into another protracted war in the Middle East for nothing. Like, to do nothing, to change nothing, to do nothing but kill people.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess, and really, like, just to emphasize this point, we know what would work here. When there was a ceasefire for a few days, right, the attacks in the Red Sea stopped. That's it, right? Like, that's like, we could do a long-term version, and the problem would be solved. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, the real thing here is also that, okay, the Palestinians, I mean, people will you know, I think there's a lot of revisionist history and a lot of different directions on this, but, you know, this is, you know, this has been since, you know, since 1967, these people have been living under Israeli military occupation in the West Bank and Gaza in different forms, you know, and it's, they're, you know, like, but there's never been a point where they're like, okay, we're just going to let you form your own independent state, right? That's a thing that's never happened. And, you know, and a lot of people I've seen, you know, like Trump apologists have their own version of revisionist history there, where it's like, oh, everything was peaceful and great, you know, when he...
I heard that on October, like October 9th, when people were like, essentially... what's the name? Hamas. They did this because, you know, there's not a strong man in the White House. There's nobody who they think is willing to nuclear bomb them into like this idea that, like, because Trump is perceived as crazy and hot-headed, that they were kept at bay. I've heard that argument made, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and there are people who will bring up like the Abraham Accords, which was this thing that, you know, Trump made a big deal of doing, which was essentially about like this diplomatic coming together of Israel and Saudi Arabia,
the Saudis and the Emiratis and all of these, you know, essentially Muslim Arab nations who traditionally through the years, at least rhetorically, if not if in no other way, honestly, providing absolutely no other support whatsoever for the Palestinian people, but at least rhetorically, the regimes would pay lip service to the idea that they care about what's happening to the Palestinians, meaning their subjugation needs to end. Again, like, you could be as pro-Israel as you want. I don't begrudge anybody their pro-Jewish state, ethno-nationalist state, whatever. You can do that if you want. But, like, what are these people? So should these people just live in a stateless existence? No self-determination ever for the rest of these people's existence? Like, is that, like, why do they have to be the only people on planet Earth subjected to this? Like, why?
Yeah. And I mean, like, it's not just, you know, to really emphasize when you say stateless, it's not just they don't have their own independent state. It's, you know, they're certainly not, you know, they're certainly not allowed, you know, citizenship in Israel. Right. So it's like,
no, they have no agency anywhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I mean, this has been, you know, in 1967, you know, when Israel took the West Bank and Gaza, I mean, if you're a Palestinian who was born the day after that war ended, you would be eligible for senior citizen discounts today, right? Like that's been how long that's been going on, you know? And so, and in fact, the whole point of the Abraham Accords, what Trump was doing, was to freeze out the Palestinians.
Stop talking about that. We're done with that. That's a settled issue. Let's get to the business of being buddies, because we all hate Iran. All the Palestinian shit, it's in the past. Fuck that. We all hate Iran. We can all agree on that. Now let's shake hands and make this official, because let's be real, unofficially, there is no beef between the Israelis and the Saudis and hasn't been for decades.
Well, that's the ridiculous thing about it. People will talk about this.
The enemies, way. Israel surrounded by enemies. It's like, no, they're not.
Yeah. Oh, Trump ended that war that was happening between Saudi Arabia and Israel. Like that just, come on. It's silly, right?
It's ridiculous.
Like, but what it does is it, like, diplomatically, it takes away the only card, or really, you know, half a card, right, that the Palestinians ever had, which is that, like, at least the Arab states pretended to care. They had, you know, at least you couldn't have totally normal relations with those states as long as, you know, the Israel-Palestine issue hadn't been settled. And you know, it took even that away, right? And then that process of normalization between those states and Israel continued under Biden. Really, that's why October 7th happened. When
a lot of people will say that, that is why, because, and you know, for people to understand, and we might have mentioned this on the show before, like, it feels like you know, today, it would seem that the Saudi royal family rules that country with an iron fist and their power is intractable. You could say the same thing about the Emiratis. You could say the same thing about the people in the ruling regime in Qatar. It would seem that way. However, that stability is based on the acquiescence of the people. And so, like, they erode their credibility with their own people if they come out and be like, we love Israel for the shit they're doing to the Palestinians. They can't do that. Like, I get it. It seems like they're intractable now, but that doesn't always have to be the case. Okay? Like, that power is fragile. The stability is fragile. As far as, you know, the power that they rule their people with. And, you know, it doesn't always have to be the case there. And so, like, when people act like it doesn't matter what happens to the Palestinians, no, it's not true.
Yeah. I mean, look, lots of monarchies and dictatorships that have existed for a lot longer than those ones have fallen, right? I mean, like, there's
toppled, nothing,
none of this stuff is permanent. And yeah, population certainly cares, which is why they had to, you know, pretend to a certain extent to care and then, like, you know, being enticed to kind of give up on caring. I think that, you know, led to a situation where things were going to explode, as well as a lot of what was going on, you know, within Israel, Palestine. People, there's this ridiculous, like, talking point. It's like, oh, well, you know, there was a ceasefire on October 7th. So it's like, well, not really, right? Like, there was,
they're killing these dudes all the time. Like, the IDF is killing these cats all the time, ceasefire or not. It's, you know, because again, they're our friend. They get to operate within the double standard of that friends of the US get to operate. And so, yeah, it's like when they kill people during the ceasefire, it's like, no, this is just regular. We're just killing terrorists, like killing terrorists during the ceasefire. Yeah, you know, count. This doesn't count. You know, yeah, anybody who we deem to be terrorists, it doesn't count.
And that's even Gaza. I mean, at the same time, like on the West Bank,
these frothing at the mouth settlers, forget about it, armed to the teeth. Just going insane. Like, we know what's happening, but I wanted to pivot a little bit, Ben, because I think Joe Biden is suffering from a crisis of confidence within the American people. Nobody thinks he's leading. Like, let's just say your best, if you're a Biden flack and you are on the Woke Bros right now, and I said, give me some proof that y'all are leading that you guys play any meaningful leadership role in the events that are unfolding over there. Like, where is it? Where is it?
Yeah. I mean, what Biden always says, in fact, like there's that AME church where he was disrupted by hecklers, you know, who are,
these peace people, how could they do it at a black church, Ben? You know, the black church is sacred now. You can't demonstrate for the deaths. Do it at Jerry Falwell's church now. Come on. The black church is sacred, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
talk about human shields. That's what Biden was doing.
No, exactly. Also, like, look, I don't, you know, I wasn't raised in Christianity, so I might not be an expert here, but like, I'm pretty sure that promoted peace and the Christian religion, you know, there's a, you know, might not be a totally inappropriate context, but yeah, so in that, right, like if you watch that video where Biden, you know, like Biden's being heckled, you know, what he even tries to say in the moment is like, well, you know, I've been working quietly, you know, behind the scenes, you know.
So that's the leadership. It's happening quietly. Nobody can see it.
Yeah, exactly, right?
It's invisible.
You just have to take their word for it. and it's like, well, what's the, you know, I mean, they say people like it, like if you go back and look at like the whole course of the last 3 months, and see like all this alleged pressure on Israel. They have, you know, like what have they gotten for it, right? There was a ceasefire for like a few days. People make a big deal about like letting in humanitarian aid and like how, you know, US pressure might help make that happen. But if you look at the actual amount of aid, and you compare it to a situation where 1.9 million out of 2.3 million people have been displaced from their homes. Certainly no food is being produced in Gaza right now, by God, right? You know, and you know, and you say, oh, well, hey, we let in like 100 aid trucks for those 1.9 million people. It's a joke, right? So the old, and like, especially now, right, what, like, for, it seems like for at least a week or so, what all the Biden people have been saying is, oh, well, the Israelis have said that they're transitioning to a lower intensity, you know, form of warfare, which we think is going to be good for reducing civilian casualties, letting in more humanitarian aid. But even that, they say, like, if you read the fine print on that, they say, like, at the end of the month, right? So it's like, okay, so you know, all it takes is, well, in a few weeks, you know, in a few weeks,
they're going to chill, essentially.
Yeah. It's like, well, okay, first of all, so you're saying we can have a few more weeks of horror until that happens. And two, I don't believe you, right? Like, why should I believe that they're actually going to do that? Like, they haven't given me any reason to think that. I mean, all this.
No, stuff- in fact, Netanyahu's going out and saying, no, we need to control that whole area.
It oh my God!
Yeah, controlled by Israel from the river to the sea.
Yeah, exactly. He actually used the line, right?
He used it, which I thought I thought that was a racist term to ever utter. Ben, apparently not.
No, apparently it's totally fine to say that.
Fine for you to say that, and also because you know they always do this shit about, oh, Hamas wants to genocide Israel and every single Jew that's ever lived, blah 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 blah, right? Meanwhile, these dudes are shooting pea shooters. The Israelis actually have the capability of doing it with the weaponry that has been provided to them by the West and their other collaborators. They have the will, and they're saying they're gonna do it.
Yes, all the time.
It's important for people to know that, like, Hamas doesn't own, you know, fighter jets and all of this crazy weaponry. They don't have that. They couldn't do that to Israel even if they wanted to. It's not a reality. It's not a possibility. Israel, on the other hand, absolutely does, could, and is saying that they will.
Yeah, I mean,
like, that's cool. Apparently,
if you look at South Africa's indictment of Israel at the International Court of Justice, a huge part of it is just quotes from Israeli officials where they're saying things like, you know, there are no innocent civilians in Gaza. Long term, you know, when this is all over, we should try to relocate most of them somewhere else. You know, like all of this stuff like that, right? This is. You know, there are a million statements where... Or
what did they say? Encouraged migration, I think, was one of the euphemisms that they used, which I just think was crazy. I want to get you out of here on this idea, Ben, because, you know, when I see Biden talking about are the airstrikes stopping the Houthis? No. Are they going to continue? Yes.
By the way, at the beginning of all this, you were talking about Biden losing support. And I know the sort of thing that you're supposed to say if you're like a world-weary kind of Dem operative who's, you know, who knows better and doesn't get excited about this shit. You know, you're supposed to say, oh, yeah, well, people are mad about it now, but nobody's going to remember that, you know, in 10 months, you know, when the election is. And it's like, okay, but for that theory to be work, it has to be over sometime between now and then. Like, when's it going to be over? And if you're doing stuff like bombing Yemen, then that doesn't point towards it being over. It points towards a wider war that could very well still be going on in November.
Of course, the war is going to still be going on. Who are we fucking kidding? Like, stop it. They're not going to be done by November. Are you kidding me? Anyway, the reason why I asked is because we know.
Yeah.
If you do any reading, you know, of the people who are really close to this, we know, like, the national security establishment sort of operates as a hammer. Uh-huh. If you come to them with what should we be doing in the Middle East, they're going to find a nail.
Yeah,
right. Like, they're going to. So we know you can't go to, like, Biden can't go to his national security establishment of advisors and analysts and all of that and say, yo, what's the, like, I know there's the bomb the shit out of the Houthis vision, but what's another vision that we could have for how we're operating. He's only going to get, oh, maybe we could bomb Iran. You know, like the options are going to be very limited to that frame. So who the fuck is Biden talking to, if anybody? Where does he get the other frame from?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really good question because, you know, ideally, right, from diplomats, the State Department, whatever. But, you know, I've seen very little evidence that that's, you know, happening.
I heard the State Department is getting shut out. Yeah. I heard he's told the State Department to fuck off. I'm a Middle East expert. I don't need your opinions on this.
Yeah, right. And he's been like, and this is the other thing about Biden, that he's been consistently terrible on stuff like this forever. Like, this is not, you know, like anybody who's, you know, and this is one of the things that makes me pretty skeptical about, oh, quietly behind the scenes where you can't see, where you have to take his word for it, right? That there's some kind of like meaningful pressure being applied, which, by the way, meaningful pressure would be like, we're going to stop supporting you if you do this, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's, of course.
You know, I mean, because if it's not that, anything else is just a request. Right. It's just feedback. Right. Like, it's and that's and, you know, Netanyahu's going to take that, you know, like seriously, maybe to the point that like he doesn't, you know, he doesn't laugh in your face. But like that's as seriously as he's going to take it. But yeah, one of the reasons I don't believe that he's applied that kind of pressure is that Biden has been super duper pro Israel his entire career. If you go back, I actually wrote an article about Jacobin about this last year. You know, if you go back when 1981, right, when Israel invaded Lebanon and Menachem Begin was visiting the United States, he met with a bunch of people, a bunch of American politicians in D.C., including Senator Biden, and the conversation was written up in an Israeli newspaper in Hebrew. It was never translated to the U.S. because nobody gives, you know, nobody really gives a shit. It's the senator from Delaware. Who cares what he says, right? But but like the stuff that Biden was saying to Begin is really shocking. He was like, yeah, of course, right? There's like terrorism from Lebanon. Of course you had to do all that. You know, if there's terrorism from Canada, you know, we'd bomb all the cities in Canada, you know, kill everybody. And so this is the stuff he was saying in 1981. I see no evidence since then that he's had any meaningful
that he's involved hard. On the issue.
No, not at all. In fact, back in during the Obama administration, there was a time when Vice President Biden was visiting Israel, and I think it was Netanyahu then too, right? Netanyahu was doing stuff that the Obama administration didn't want them to do, you know, building more settlements, stuff like that. And it was seen as this big embarrassment that he was doing all that, like while the vice president was visited. And the, you know, Secretary of State, who's somebody I'm not a fan of, Hillary Clinton, but she had, but she put out this statement being like, no, you got to stop it, or this is really going to be a problem, right? You know, and Vice President Biden apparently went to Netanyahu and said, "Don't worry about that. I'll calm. I'll smooth all this over." Right? Like this is in the Obama. This is under the Obama administration, right? So there's no reason to think that
Biden's got like a Herzl tattoo somewhere on his body. Exactly.
Right? He's the most. Yeah, he is the most fanatically pro-Israel Irish guy that Delaware ever produced.
Yeah.
So it's a horrible situation because it's not like, you know, it's not like Trump you know, is going to be better if he beats him, which as of this moment it looks very possible that he's going to do. It was because when Trump was president, he did absolutely everything the Israelis wanted him to do. He finally moved the embassy to Jerusalem, which they've been pushing for like decades. Again, Abraham Accords, you're all about freezing out the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. You know, there was there was, you know, there was basically nothing that Trump, you know, Trump wouldn't do for them. But it's also going to be really hard, right? Like, so I'm from Michigan, and that is that's a state that Trump won in 2016 and Biden won in 2020, pretty important swing state. And, you know, it also has the biggest Arab American population in the U.S. And I've got to say, like, you know, as much as I actually do think that, you know, that like, if possible on this, Trump would actually be even slightly worse, it's going to be a really hard sell to go to those people and say, yeah, I know Biden has been helping.
I know he's completely shit the bed, but it can be worse.
Yeah, right. So feel like, okay, yeah, I know that, like,
Biden. Yeah, but guess what? Trump's not asking for support.
You know, Biden killed a bunch of your cousins in the Middle East, but, like, Trump would probably be even worse. You should still vote for Biden. I mean, I don't know. Good luck with that.
Yeah, that's the Democratic Party. Good luck with that. Ben, thank you for coming on. Tell the people where they can find all of your stellar work, my brother.
Thank you so much. So I write for Jackman Magazine. That's jackman.com.
Sure.
And I host a YouTube show. A podcast called Give Them an Argument.
I was on that the other day. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you were on that very recently. Have been on many times. We'll be on soon again, I'm sure. Sure. Yeah, thanks again.
All right, y'all. We will see you guys next week. Shouts to producer John Gervais on the ones and threes, making sure that the trains run on time. Become a Patreon at patreon.com/countthedings. That helps us put out this amazing content for you guys. We'll see you guys next week. Peace.